ओम गणतम हिंदस्य जनार्दन सेवकाया चक्षु सुमिरतां जैन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टां सपीतां जैन भूतले स्वयं रूपधरामायं ददति सफलंतिकाम् The couple of rubies, child, Christmas in the way, which are petite and I'm probably named all by some of them on the mark. While we were hearing yesterday about the description of future manas, we heard about Bali Maharaj, the son of Virachan, the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, who fought with Indra, the king of heaven, and then the Lord came, Lord Vishnu came, to beg charity from Bali Maharaj, came as Lord Vamandev. He gave that charity, this is from just what we read yesterday, chapter 13, text 13. He gave in charity the entirety of the three worlds of the kingdom of heaven, which he had in his possession. He had overthrown Indra. And then the Lord Vishnu, Vamandev, wasn't pleased with him. He was pleased with him, but yet the reward for his pleasure was to send him to Sutala, which was a hellish planet. He took away everything and then sent him to Sutala. But this Sutala was not hell, a burning, fiery, brimstony hell, but it was a lower planet that was so opulent. And then, because Bali Maharaj had given up the throne of Indra to Vamandev, because Vamandev had requested and tricked him, actually, then the result of that was that in the next, in the eighth manu, then Bali Maharaj actually became Indra. He increased his spiritual standing, his spiritual piety to the degree that he could take the position of King Indra. He was actually an Indra. Indra is a position, not a person's name. So, in the beginning of this next chapter, chapter 15, which is entitled Bali Maharaj Conquers the Heavenly Planets, it begins with Maharaj Prickett inquiring, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the proprietor of everything." Yes? Why did he beg 3 paces of land from Bali Maharaj like a poor man? Why did he beg an insignificant amount of land as if he was poor? He owns everything. He's a supreme lord. And when he got the gift for which he had begged, why did he nonetheless arrest Bali Maharaj? I am very much anxious to know the mystery of these contradictions. Seeming unlikely things to have occurred. He's not a poor man, yet he begged. These are the inconceivable pastimes of the Lord. And this is the leela of the Lord. He does something very wonderful. He acts in wonderful ways, unexpected ways. The owner of everything begs. The beggar is in a humble position. He takes the humble position and begs from a demon, Bali Maharaj. And then, after getting what he wants, he ties him up. What is the mystery behind these pastimes? So Sukadeva Goswami in text 3 begins to answer, "O King, when Bali Maharaj lost all his opulence and died in the fight," and this was described previously, way back after the churning of the ocean of milk, when the demons, when the nectar was produced and they had the amrita, they had it, and then the Lord came and tricked them in what form? Mohini Murti took everything away. Then the demigods drank the nectar, and the demons became furious because they had labored so intensely. And what did they get from their labor? Nothing. They got nothing. So they were furious that their enemies had drunk the amrita, the nectar. So they immediately, with fury, attacked. And the demigods, they were winning and they were losing and they were winning. Then they prayed when they were losing, because when one's winning, generally one doesn't pray. But when one's losing, then one thinks one has no choice. So the demigods prayed that the Lord come, and the Lord did come, and He turned the tide. And there was a fight between Indra and Balimaraj. Balimaraj was the chief amongst the demons, and Indra the chief amongst the demigods. They were fighting. And ultimately, even though Balimaraj was very truthful and very powerful, ultimately Balimaraj was stricken down by Indra. And then, as described earlier, then the result of that was that Sukracharja, actually Narada Muni, stopped the fight before the demons got completely annihilated. But what happened was the remaining demons took the stricken soldiers to Sukracharja, the great powerful priest, powerful Brahmin priest. And using mantras, he brought Balimaraj back to life. And that's what we're going to hear about more. So when Balimaraj lost all his opulence and died in the fight, Sukracharja, descendant of the Bhrigu Muni, brought him back to life. There's a mantra called the Sanjivani. So powerful. It reinstituted the soul within the injured body and healed the injured body of Sukracharja. So he was brought back to life by the power, the potency of the mantras and the mystical ways of the great Brahmin priest Sukracharja. Sukracharja, we also heard of him previously in the 7th canto. He was the priest of Hiranyakashipu. He took always the side of the demons and acted as their priest to perform the ceremonies and give them the power of conquering the demigods. So because of this, because he was brought to life by Sukracharja, the great soul Balimaraj became a disciple of Sukracharja, and he began to serve him with great faith, offering everything he had. Why was his faith so strong? Because he was dead and he brought him back to life. So therefore he trusted in his potency for him to get what he wanted. If he has so much power, he'll be able to give me what I want. And what did Balimaraj want? He wanted to conquer the demigods and get even with them and attain the position of Indra. So the Brahmin descendants of Bhrigu Muni were very pleased with Balimaraj because he served Sukracharja very well, who desired to conquer the kingdom of Indra, so they were pleased with him. Therefore, after purifying himself and properly bathing himself according to regulative principles, they engaged him in performing a jagya known as Vishvajit. What does Vishvajit mean? Vishvajit. Vishva means universe, and Ajit, or Jit. Yeah, Jit means conquer, the conqueror. So to conquer the universe, Ajita is the name of Krishna, because he's unconquerable. So Jita means conquerable, conquer. So he's going to perform a sacrifice that has so much power within it that it will allow him to conquer the universe. When ghee, clarified butter, was offered in the fire of sacrifice, there appeared from the fire a celestial chariot covered with gold and silk. There also appeared yellow horses like those of Indra, and a flag marked with a lion, which is from the sacrificial fire. A gilded bow. What does gilded mean? Gilded bow. It's if the bow is gilded, or gold, a golden bow. Upanandam, covered with gold. Yes, covered with gold. Why wasn't it a regular golden bow, 24 karat? Everyone knows. At least probably everyone knows. Why? You'd be able to bend it too easily. So it was a very powerful bow, but it was covered, gilded. with gold. So a gilded bow, two quivers of infallible arrows, and celestial armor also appeared. Bali Maharaj's grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, offered Bali a garland of flowers that would never fade, and Sukracharya gave him a kansha. When Bali Maharaj had thus performed the special ritualistic ceremony advised by the Brahmins and had received by their grace the equipment for fighting, he circumambulated the Brahmins and offered them obeisances. He also saluted Prahlad Maharaj and offered obeisances to him. Then, after getting on the chariot given by Sukracharya, Bali Maharaj, decorated with a nice garland, put protective armor on his body, equipped himself with a bow, and took up a sword and quiver of arrows. When he sat down on the seat of the chariot, his arms decorated with golden bangles and his ears with sapphire earrings, he shone like a worshipable fire. So he was very powerful. So we can see here one of the differences between demons, ordinary old demons, atheistical type of demons of the contemporary society, and this type of a demon, very, very pious. What's the difference? The contemporary persons, who everyone is basically demonic in this day and age, how do they think? They think, by my power, by my energy, by my determination, by my visualization, by my fixing my mind, I will achieve what I want. By my hard work. But it all rests, according to this way of thinking, upon me. And therefore, people think that if you don't succeed in the material world, there's something wrong with you. Because everyone who works hard, who is determined, who focuses their mind on succeeding, they can succeed unlimitedly. This is the way people think. And therefore, someone who doesn't succeed is someone who hasn't focused his mind, who's not determined. There's something really, really wrong with him and lacking with him. So everything starts with me in contemporary Asuric demonic society. But it is a very impious way of thinking. Impious means that it is greatly illusory, because without Krishna's sanction, without Krishna awarding power, no one can succeed in anything. Even anything. No one can succeed in anything at all without Krishna's grace. So we are very tiny and insignificant. And that's the way of thinking of contemporary people, is that I'm not tiny. I'm not insignificant. I'm great. I'm the center. I'm all in all, practically speaking. It's very, very, very... It's inaccurate, obviously, but it's also crazy. And it's demonic. When the insignificant thinks that he's all-powerful, it's insane. And when that all-powerful is acknowledged to be God, that means basically the insignificant soul is thinking that he's God. All-powerful is God. So that's demonic. Not only foolish, it's demonic, it's evil. But these personalities, even though they were considered demonic, such as Bali Maharaj, they understood that if I'm going to be successful, it's going to come from higher powers. At least that acknowledgement is there. Maybe there's material ambition, maybe they don't surrender to Krishna, maybe they don't acknowledge that the Lord is supreme, or the supreme power. They'll know that he's so powerful, but maybe not acknowledge he's supreme. But yet, they understand that something, someone is higher than me, more powerful than me, and that I need extra help in some way for me to succeed. So in that consciousness, at least there is hope for spiritual advancement. Because it just has to be changed from that something is higher than me, and that I'm performing austerity. Even Narada, he saw Brahma, who he had thought was the Supreme Lord, performing austerities, and he said, if you're performing austerities, that's to please someone, and I previously thought you're the Supreme Lord, but if you're trying to please someone to get your powers, that means someone is above you and you're not supreme. So therefore, Narada asked his father Brahma, who is above you and who is supreme? Because it's not you. So that performing sacrifices or performing austerities to gain some power to succeed, at least it's an acknowledgement that I am not supreme. It's at least free from that illusion, that evil demonic illusion that I am the supreme. So through these sacrifices, through brahminical powers, through the tejas, it's the piety, the Brahmins, they spend their time performing pious activities, sacrifices, etc., which are very pious. And piety gives one power. Doing good gives one power. Not just determined to get there somehow or another gives one power. No, doing good gives one power to succeed. So, the Brahmins would award through these sacrifices, they would award their piety to persons. And those persons would get power and the benedictions that they want. But the Brahmins would lose their power in this way. There's so many stories in the Mahabharata in this way about this kind of a thing. Where there was once a Brahmana priest who had a friend who was a king who wanted a son. And he got a son, and they performed some type of a sacrifice, and then the Brahmin priest helped him perform a sacrifice to have many sons, something like that. And then the sacrifice was successful. He had many sons, and the king died, and he went to hell. And then he was there, and he saw the Brahmin priest there. And he said, "Why? I can understand. I've done so many things, but why are you here?" And he said, "Because I performed the sacrifice for you. That's why I'm here. Giving up piety, trying to, because they were so powerful, they could change the way nature worked, but that used up their piety." So Bali Maharaj increased his piety and became so powerful. He was shown exactly brightly like a worshipable fire. He was so effulgent with strength, bala. So when he assembled with his own soldiers and the demon chiefs who were equal to him in strength, opulence and beauty, they appeared as if they would swallow the sky and burn all directions with their vision. After thus gathering the demoniac soldiers, Bali Maharaj departed for the opulent capital of Indra. Indeed, he seemed to make the entire surface of the world tremble. So getting so much power and potency, what was he trying to do? Just conquer his enemy, Indra, and take over the kingdom of heaven. Now what was that kingdom of heaven like? And again, heaven is not a place like this world, that we imagine what would be the perfection of this world, and we think of all the things that we can enjoy with our senses, and all those things are there. And not only are those things, the good things there, but the bad things aren't there. Only good weather, etc., etc., etc. But that's not actually what heaven is. It's not earth type of sense enjoyment. It's much more fine and much more subtle. Because one can only enjoy according to the subtleness and the fineness of his consciousness. It's not that if one, say if one enjoys a particular type of food. And it's not that if we have unlimited amounts of that food that our enjoyment will increase unlimitedly. No. Enjoyment on the sense level has its limitations. But if one's consciousness is very, very subtle and fine, then one's enjoyment will be more subtle and fine. And that's how enjoyment increases, actually. That in longevity of life. So very, very, very fine consciousness. And that's why people can't go to heaven very easily, or heavenly planets, even for material enjoyment. Because one has to purify his consciousness to go there. And that's actually the secret. That's actually the secret of enjoyment on in the spiritual world too. One has to purify one's consciousness to the degree that every last drop of materialism, which means the tendency towards selfish enjoyment, every last particle of that is removed from the consciousness. And when that is there, when all that is there in one's consciousness is what one's consciousness actually is, purity, pure spiritual essence, then it's very easy, first of all, to awaken one's dormant love for Krishna. But then one can go back to Godhead. But we tend to want to go back to the spiritual world with gross consciousness, and when we think of what heaven would be, it's like something like a kid, how he thinks of heaven would be to have a credit card with unlimited credit in Toys R Us or something, and you can just enjoy whatever games forever that you want. But heaven is something completely different. Actually, there was many years ago when I lived in Hong Kong, we were dealing with a very wealthy family. And one of the children, I still remember his name was Vijay. His room, just like when you see a scholarly person, his room will have books everywhere. Just on all the walls, I've seen people like this. Because that's their mode of activity and pleasure. So this boy, he had toys. Literally, shelves and shelves and shelves and shelves and shelves and shelves of toys. And I saw him one day just taking one down, looking at it, playing with it for a second, throwing it away, taking another down, playing with it for a second, just so frustrated with his unlimited toys. Because material, increased facility for material sense enjoyment on the level that we like to enjoy our senses without increasing the subtlety of our consciousness doesn't bring enjoyment at all. It brings frustration and misery. Because the pleasure that we're longing for just simply doesn't exist in these objects. So it takes a purification of consciousness for enjoyment. So in any case, the kingdom of heaven, Indraloka, that we'll now hear about, was on a different, more subtle level of consciousness and very, very wonderful. And the demons, headed by Bali Maharaj, approached that. And here's what it was like. King Indra's city was full of pleasing orchards and gardens, such as the Nandana garden. Because of the weight of the flowers, leaves and fruit, the branches of the eternally existing trees were bending down. The gardens were visited by pairs of chirping birds and singing bees. The entire atmosphere was celestial. Beautiful women, protected by the demigods, sported in the gardens, which had lotus ponds full of swans, cranes, chakravakas and ducks. The city was surrounded by trenches full of Ganges water, known as Akash Ganga, and by a high wall which was the color of fire. Upon this wall were parapets for fighting. That you don't see in Vrindavan. Because this is the material world, even though it's a heavenly part of the material world. So as soon as it's the material world, there is fighting. That means defending, that means fear. Because that is a principle of the material world. But Vaikuntha, or the spiritual world, means fearless. There is no fear there. No fighting. Only lila and pastimes. There is no opposition. The doors on the walls were made of solid gold plates, and the gates were of excellent marble. These were linked by various public roads. The entire city had been constructed by Vishwakarma. The city was full of courtyards, wide roads, assembly houses, and not less than 100 million aeroplanes. The crossroads were made of pearl, and there were sitting places made of diamonds and coral. So these auspicious items, natural auspicious items, brought such a rarefied, fine atmosphere. When we think about advancement in contemporary civilization, it's not in these fine auspicious material items. Instead of gold, there are plastic. Previously, people would wear gold bangles. Prabhupada would speak about that often. The ladies had gold bangles, gold this, gold that, silk. Very, very auspicious. But nowadays, plastic. The money is plastic. Everything is plastic. So it's not, it doesn't have an auspiciousness to it. It doesn't bring up the atmosphere. So very, very auspicious. Sitting places made of diamonds and coral. They alone make people powerful. Everlastingly beautiful and youthful women who were dressed with clean garments glittered in the city like fires and flames. They all possessed the quality of Shama. The breezes blowing in the streets of the city bore the fragrance of the flowers falling from the hair of the women of the demigods. Apsaras passed on the streets, which were covered from the white fragrant smoke of agaru incense emanating from windows with golden filigree. So very, very wonderful. There was smoke everywhere, and it wasn't fumes, exhaust fumes and horrible smelling things, but it was incense, fragrance everywhere in the middle of all this auspiciousness. The city was shaded by canopies decorated with pearls, and the domes of the palace that had flags of pearls and gold. The city always resounded with the vibrations of peacocks, pigeons, and bees, auspicious. And above the city flew airplanes full of beautiful women who constantly chanted auspicious songs that were very pleasing to the ear. The city was filled with the sounds of madungas, conch shells, kettle drums, flutes, and well-tuned string instruments all playing in concert. There was constant dancing, and the Gandharvas sang. The combined beauty of Indrapuri defeated beauty personified. No one who was sinful, envious, violent towards other living entities, cunning, falsely proud, lusty, or greedy, could enter that city. The people who lived there were all devoid of these faults. So again, fine consciousness, fine, subtle, pure on the material level consciousness, pious. So into this heavenly scene came Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj, who was the commander of numberless soldiers, gathered his soldiers outside this abode of Indra and attacked it from all directions. He sounded the conch shell given to him by his spiritual master, Sukracharya, thus creating a fearful situation for the women protected by Indra. Seeing Bali Maharaj's indefatigable endeavor and understanding his motive, King Indra, along with the other demigods, approached his spiritual master, Brihaspati, and spoke as follows. So Sukracharya is the spiritual master of the Asuras, and Brihaspati is the spiritual master of the Suras, or the demigods. So he approached Bali Maharaj, seeing Bali Maharaj had come to fight and seeming so powerful, coming right to the doors of heaven. So Brihaspati was asked by Indra what to do. So he said, he approached Indra and said, Indra approached Brihaspati and said, "My lord, our old enemy Bali Maharaj now has new enthusiasm, and he has obtained such astonishing power that we think that perhaps we cannot resist his prowess." He admitted that he's too powerful for us. "No one anywhere can counteract this military arrangement of Bali's. It now appears that Bali is trying to drink up the entire universe with his mouth, lick up the 10 directions with his tongue, and raise fire in every direction with his eyes. so powerful. Indeed, he has arisen like the annihilating fire known as Samvataka. Kindly inform me, what is the cause for Bali Maharaj's strength, endeavor, influence, and victory? How has he become so enthusiastic? In other words, how? Where did he get this power from? How has this happened? Text 28. Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, said, O Indra, I know the cause for your enemies becoming so powerful. The Brahmana descendants of Bhrigu Muni, being pleased by Bali Maharaj, their disciple, endowed him with such extraordinary power. Here's Prabhupada's purpose for this verse. Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, informed Indra, ordinarily Bali and his forces could not achieve such strength, but it appears that the Brahman descendants of Bhrigu Muni, being pleased with Bali Maharaj, endowed them with this spiritual power. In other words, Brihaspati informed Indra that Bali Maharaj's prowess was not his own, but that of his exalted guru, Sukracharya. He had given it to him. Because he was pleased with Bali Maharaj, he had awarded him with spiritual power. And that spiritual power was this power for fighting Indra, or he awarded him this power. We sing in our daily prayers, Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Prasado, Yasya Prasada Nagatiya Katopi. By the pleasure of the spiritual master, one can get extraordinary power, especially in spiritual advancement. The blessings of the spiritual master are more powerful than one's personal endeavor for such advancement. Narottama Das Thakur therefore says, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitate Koriya Aikya Arna Kariya Manayasa. Especially for spiritual advancement, one should carry out the bona fide order of the spiritual master. By the parampara system, one can thus be endowed with the original spiritual power coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Evam parampara praptam imam rajasya ovidu. So originally, power is spiritual. So the Brahmins have power, and they had awarded it to Bali Maharaj. And where do the Brahmins get their power from? It's Krishna's power, because Krishna set up the Varnashrama system, and he awarded the Brahmins specific potencies and abilities, and he empowered the different Vedic verses and the Vedic sacrifices to be able to award. He empowered the mantras, and because of Krishna's empowerment, these things work. So ultimately, all power is spiritual power. But yet the point that Prabhupada chooses to make here is not how to gain material, take this spiritual power or all power which was originally spiritual and then use it to conquer or to enjoy, conquer the material world in some way or another. But rather it's how to make spiritual advancement. And that spiritual advancement, and this is one of the first things that we learn when we come in contact with the Krishna consciousness movement, it comes by the pleasure of Guru, Yasya Prasada, Bhagavat Prasada, Yasya Prasada, Nagati Katopi. Why? Because this is Krishna's system. This is the system that Krishna uses to award his own power upon a person. One can't circumvent this system of pleasing he who is dear to Krishna. So this is the system. And therefore, Guru Mukhya Padma Vakya Chitate Kuriya Aikya Arna Kariya Manayasa. The Narottama Das Thakur prays that this is the, that he wants to make his consciousness one with the words of his spiritual master. In other words, not to be at a divergence. This is surrender. This is complete surrender. When one's consciousness is not at a divergence from God, as everyone's consciousness is in the material world, but it is co-joint with His. This is what surrender is. Dovetailed. When the consciousness of the individual soul, the desires of the individual soul, they become harmonious with the desires of Krishna. Most religious people in this world think of it the other way. They pray to God that God dovetails his desires with their desires. Give me this, give me that. Money, wealth, get rid of my enemy, passing exams, give me health, give me this. So many things. This is my desire, and asking God to fulfill my desire. And what surrender is just the opposite of that. Instead of dovetailing God's desire with ours, it's the opposite. We take our desires and make them one with his desires. That is surrender. And that is the beginning, the actual beginning of devotional service. So especially for spiritual advancement, one should carry out the bona fide order of the spiritual master. And the blessings of the spiritual master are more powerful than one's personal endeavor for such advancement. In other words, that one has to endeavor for his advancement. It's not that one can sit back and wait for mercy to come to him. One must make one's own endeavor. But that endeavor isn't sufficient. It's necessary but not sufficient for advancement. And more important than for actual advancement, more important than our endeavor is blessings, the mercy of the spiritual master. But the mercy of the spiritual master, the blessings do not come without the endeavor. Like a child trying to lift a huge weight. When the father sees that the child is trying to lift this, he's a weightlifter, he sees that his child is trying to lift this huge weight, he's grabbing it and going like this, then the father says, let me add my strength. And then the boy is crying and the father is doing all the work. He's actually doing the lifting. On one level, the father's lifting is much more important than the child's lifting. Because he's actually doing the work. The blessings of the spiritual master are more powerful than one's personal endeavor for advancement. But, looking at it from a different angle, unless the child had that desire and made his effort and worked, there would be no impetus on the part of the father to use his strength to lift the weight. So similarly, our endeavor is required. Sincere endeavor in Krishna service, giving it everything. But ultimately the advancement doesn't come from our endeavor, it comes by higher mercy, by divine grace. So this is what Brihaspati has described, even on a material level. And this is the Vedic system. Very, very different than the contemporary way people think. Nothing happens by blessings. Everything happens by my own endeavor, by me, 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 me. The beginning, the middle, the end is me. That's illusion. So Brihaspati continues. Neither you nor your men can conquer the most powerful Bali. Indeed, no one but the Supreme Personality of Godhead can conquer him. For he is now equipped with the supreme spiritual power, Brahma Tejas. As no one can stand before Yamaraj, no one can now stand before Bali Maharaj. No one can stand before Yamaraj means that no one can stand before death. No one can challenge death. When it's time to die, no one can put up a fight. No one can delay death for 1 minute. What to speak of years. Not even for 1 second. So no one can stand. What an interesting parallel. No one could stand before Bali Maharaj now in the same way that no one can stand before Yamaraj, the Lord of Death. When it's time to die, the biggest, most powerful people in this world, finished in 1 moment. So he's saying there's no use fighting Bali Maharaj now. Therefore, waiting until the situation of your enemies is reversed, you should all leave this heavenly planet and go elsewhere where you will not be seen. Bali Maharaj has now become extremely powerful because of the benedictions given him by the Brahmanas. But when he later insults the Brahmanas, he will be vanquished along with his friends and assistants. Purport by Prabhupada. Bali Maharaj and Indra were enemies. Therefore, when Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, predicted that Bali Maharaj would be vanquished when he insulted the Brahmanas by whose grace he had become so powerful, Bali Maharaj's enemies were naturally anxious to know when that opportune moment will come. To pacify King Indra, Brihaspati assured him that the time would certainly come, for Brihaspati could see in the future Bali Maharaj would defy the orders of Sukhacharya in order to pacify Lord Vishnu, Vamandev. Of course, to advance in Krishna consciousness, one can take all risks. To please Vamanadev, Bali Maharaj risked defying the orders of his spiritual master, Sukhacharya. Because of this, he would lose all his property. Yet because of devotional service to the Lord, he would get more than he expected, and in the future, in the eighth manvantara, he would occupy the throne of Indra again. So this is what the pastime we're going to hear, that Prabhupada is, or that Brihaspati is explaining very briefly, and Prabhupada elaborates on a little more how Lord Vamandev is going to come to Bali Maharaj and take everything from him, and Bali Maharaj is going to surrender everything in charity to Vamanadeva, and Sukhacharya is going to tell him not to do it, and Bali Maharaj is going to do it anyway and disobey his spiritual master, and then Sukhacharya is going to curse him. Bali Maharaj is going to surrender to Vishnu and defy his spiritual master in doing so, and his spiritual master is going to curse him. So what's going to happen? He will lose everything according to Sukhacharya's curse, but because he has pleased Lord Vishnu, he is going to gain even more than he loses. This is the nature of devotional service. So this is what we're going to hear in this wonderful, wonderful pastime. Text 32. Sukadev Goswami continued, the demigods being thus advised by Brihaspati for their benefit, immediately accepted his words. Assuming forms according to their desire, they left the heavenly kingdom and scattered without being observed by the demons. They had that power, kamarupana. They could assume whatever form they desired. When the demigods had disappeared, so they desired to be invisible. And they had that ability. Indra had once, during the 100th horse sacrifice of Prithumaraj, one of Prithumaraj's sons was chasing Indra to slay him because Indra was stealing away the horsemen for sacrifice, and he didn't kill Indra, and Indra was pleased with him and gave him the power to become invisible. So the demigods all had that power. So when the demigods had disappeared, Bali Maharaj, the son of Virochana, entered the heavenly kingdom, and from there he brought the three worlds under his control. The Brahmin descendants of Bhrigu, being very pleased with their disciple who had conquered the entire universe, now engaged him in performing 100 Aswamedha sacrifices. Prabhupada's purport. We have seen in the dispute between Maharaj Prithu and Indra that when Prithu Maharaj wanted to perform 100 Aswamedha yagyas, Indra wanted to impede him. For it is because of such great sacrifices that Indra was made king of heaven. Here the Brahmana descendants of Bhrigu decided that although Bali Maharaj was situated on the throne of Indra, he would not be able to stay there unless he performed such sacrifices. Therefore they advised Maharaj Bali to perform at least as many Aswamedha yagyas as Indra. The word Av Ayajayan indicates that all the Brahmanas induced Bali Maharaj to perform such sacrifices. So here is again a different way of thinking than how people think in their the contemporary world. Because why? Because in this way, people thought that through piety I may gain something, and through more piety I will maintain it. Because without piety, not only cannot one gain something, but one cannot maintain it either. And this happens, there's some percentage of, I don't remember where I heard this recently, maybe it was in this class or somewhere, that with lottery tickets,
In some class someone said it, that some high percentage of the people who win big, big lottery tickets within a few years don't have the piety to maintain the wealth. They had some degree of piety to gain the wealth, but not piety to maintain it. Maintenance takes more piety. Maintaining anything takes so much endeavor and so much work. Creating something is one thing. Maintaining it is even still more difficult. So in the Vedic system, the consciousness was, through piety I will gain, through piety I will maintain. Contemporary civilization, by cheating, by this, by that, through junk bonds, through this, through that, anyway, somehow or another, I will gain wealth, I will enjoy. Illegally, legally, it doesn't make any difference. Impious ways, and then the result of that, what will happen? I will, by my strength, by my intelligence, I will maintain. But it doesn't work like that. As Lakshmi Devi is very chanchal, very flickering. But she becomes steady when she is engaged in Krishna's service. And that, because that's the supreme piety. So the priests, even though they were demonic, in the sense that they supported the demonic, Bali Maharaj, they knew that to maintain this position of Indra, one needs to be so pious. So therefore, they had him perform 100 horse sacrifices, asaneda yagyas, to increase his piety to that degree. And then when Bali Maharaj performed these sacrifices, he gained a great reputation in all directions throughout the three worlds. Thus he shone in his position like a brilliant moon in the sky. Because of the favor of the brahmanas, the great soul Bali Maharaj, thinking himself very satisfied, became very opulent and prosperous and began to enjoy the kingdom. And you see that if one tries to enjoy without piety, one doesn't become satisfied. One might have all the trappings of enjoyment around him. But without the piety, there's no satisfaction. No internal satisfaction. And without internal satisfaction, there's no actual enjoyment. So Bali Maharaj, doing things according to the Vedic system, according to the direction of the Brahmins, he was able to gain this position and maintain it and enjoy it. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
So, confusing some of these things, Maharaj, but it's just saying Bhagavad Gita, how Krishna says, no, I'm Shukracharya, Ushana.
Who was? What does Prabhupada say?
Because Ushana was a great
strategian, strategist.
Yeah. Extremely intelligent and far seeing politician.
Yes.
Politician.
Yes.
So here we have Shukracharya telling Bali Maharaj not to pull
Krishna
in the Vamana.
Later on.
Yeah. And also...
He was pious, but he had self-interest. That comes out.
And also the fact that...
It's because he was afraid that if he surrenders to Vamana Dev, then it won't be good for him. He will lose everything. Because Bali Maharaj was maintaining him. So, although he was pious, he wasn't pure. Although he was pious, he had self-interest. So it wasn't the highest kind of piety. There's different levels of piety. There's bhukti, mukti, siddhi, and bhakti, sukriti. So one can have material piety on such a level that he can gain so much material wealth, but he may not have bhakti sukriti, bhakti piety, and he has no inclination for devotional service. And one may have sukriti for jnana, or sukriti or piety for yoga, but one may not have sukriti for bhakti.
Bali Maharaj is in Mahabharata. Is this the soul
that's more qualified than the guru? In bhakti. That's what it turns out. Because why does Bali Maharaj... What's his great fortune? you know. But what caused that great fortune? That comes about by fortune. Yeah, he's the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, who's a Mahabhagavat. So association. Nishamyati tabirurup kramang vins vishadhinata bhagamoyarata mahiyasam parvijo vashenkam niskinjananam namvaniti avat. The seed of devotion was planted by Prahlad Maharaj within him. By that association, he was a devotee, but in a demonic family.
So he didn't become a Mahabhagavat until
Prahlad Maharaj came after Prahlad Maharaj. He was his grandson. Now you understand. But he actually didn't become a Mahabhagavat until Vamanadeva came and he surrendered. This will be explained in one of the purports, very wonderful purport, where Vamanadeva actually came to award him this. So on one level he took away everything, but on another level, the more intimate, eternal level, he gave everything. He came not to take, but to give. In the pretext of begging, he gave that which was truly valuable. So who was actually the victor in this pastime? Was it Indra, who gained the kingdom of heaven, or Bali Maharaj, who gained pure devotional service? And he's known as the one of the Mahajans because of his full surrender. Just like with Vritrasura, same thing happened with Indra. Who actually was the winner and who was the loser in that pastime? Indra won on one level and he gained heaven, and Vritrasura went to Vaikuntha. So who won, actually? Vritrasura brought this up to Indra. Very hard to tell who is the winner and who is the loser, unless one has spiritual vision. Does that answer what you were asking? Any other questions or comments? Yeah. Huh? It's defined in the purport, but it's so materially attractive, I decided not to read it.
Why is God told that to them? Just from the acharyas?
Huh? I'm sure the acharyas put it in. But that's what it is. They were very. This is what heaven's like. This is what materialistic people want in heaven. They want sense enjoyment. Perhaps on a subtle level, but they want sense enjoyment. Because if that agitates the mind, one doesn't have the qualification to even go there. Because people with those qualities, if a person has lusty qualities, he can't enter into the heavenly planets, what to speak of the spiritual world. But that was the quality that's mentioned. It's a tidbit of knowledge. That probably the acharyas, one of the acharyas, put in a purport. Because you may want to go there to enjoy on a more subtle level. It doesn't mean that you're a bhakta. Bhakti is something positive. The absence of a negative quality isn't necessarily positive. It doesn't mean that you have the positive thing. So there are actually many, many, many pious people in this world. But they may not be devotees. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Patita Pavanadita Tava Avaka Mosama Patita Prabhupada Paiveyava. You are the deliverer of the most fallen. So therefore, that means most fallen means not pious. So there are many pious people who are born in incredible families. They're like demigods. I've seen in India, I've seen some of these persons. They're like demigods. Very beautiful, very everything just peaceful, this and that, but they may not have bhakti. So people want to enjoy with their piety. That's a particular type of piety. That's material piety. And you can't enjoy without material piety. So these many Vedic sacrifices are meant to increase one's material piety, to bring one to heaven. So one has that desire for longevity and peaceful, opulent enjoyment. But there's still higher places too. Because remember, in heaven there's a problem. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you didn't bring back a copy of that, did you? It's described how there's a problem in heaven. You see, there's parapets for fighting. That means defending. That means the demons are always attacking heaven. And even when they're not attacking, they're afraid there. So even though there is so much wondrous, deep, subtle enjoyments there, there's still fear. Nowhere in the material world is fear absent. And there are still more pious places than Indraloka, Jnanaloka, Tapaloka, ultimately Brahmaloka. It's so deep. Brahmaloka is so deep. And it's almost spiritual. But not Krishna bhakti, Vrindavan bhakti spiritual, but it's so deep. So close to the spiritual realm that so attractive to a materialist person. But the cost is to give up everything gross, everything on the surface, all the lust, the anger, the greed, all the material attractions that persons of the mode of passion, ignorance, are so addicted to. And people won't give it up. What to speak of what has to be given up to go to Goloka Vrindavan, to relish that sweetness. One has to give up and accept both. Give up matter and accept spirit, Krishna. Accept the service of Krishna's servants, Gopi Bharta, Parakamaleva, Dasa Dasa Dasa. So we're attracted to so many things, and on the material level, subtle and gross, and therefore never peace, never happiness. Krishna bhakti niskam at eva shanta, mukti mukti siddhi kamis shakali ashanta. So as long as one has any material attachment on a gross or subtle platform, ashanta, and not truly happy and disqualified really from going to Krishna. So the answer is, the solution, to become very, very attracted to Krishna. What we want. And that's what we should pray for. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, Srila Prabhupada ki.